Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, it is Wednesday morning. We're happy you're back with us here. And man, I didn't think that many people cared about Trader Joe's, but we're getting all kinds of comments about Trader Joe's here, Kim, and customer service.
Someone on YouTube, Chris, is saying, I hate when people are too chatty. That's annoying too, or when they start joking with you. So you have to strike that balance, I guess. If you have one of those jobs where you're friendly and you're maybe a little bit chatty, but if you chat too much, then you'll just annoy people.
Please, please don't flirt with me. It annoys me.
But you can agree that if you're married and someone knows you're married, they shouldn't be making those comments, or certainly if they're married.
You know if it's inappropriate, right? You can tell. Generally
yeah,
speaking.
I would say generally speaking, you can. So yeah. That's the word offensive, as you know. I do not like that word because it's just overused, just like the word disenfranchised. When you beat it into my head at nauseam, I start to just want to not ever use the word again.
I hear you. I do. But we're glad you're with us this morning. Hey, we had a great interview with the Secretary of State, Denny Hoskins, in the last hour. You can hit rewind on the app and listen to that if you missed any of it. It was at about 7:35. Of course, we'll put that up on the podcast as well. Kim will get that up here shortly, and you'll be able to listen. He had a lot to say about the redistricting and some clerks that are arguing they don't know what the lines are when he and I both agreed the Supreme Court's made it pretty clear, but for some reason they're still fighting it, and some liberal out-of-state groups are funding these ridiculous lawsuits against this because they've got their own agenda. And that's why we need to IP reform in this state, by the way, on a separate issue. So anyway, you can go back on the podcast, but wherever you pick up your podcasts, you can get that. Welcome in if you're watching us on YouTube or X or Rumble this morning on the Window World webcam, Simply the Best for Less. We appreciate them helping us out with that. And you can always watch the show all the time.
As you should.
We're back in the friendly confines of our normal studio. We're happy about that. We got new microphones that don't squeak when you move them. Isn't that nice?
That don't fall off all the time, which really was just Mark.
Mainly me, but it did happen to Ethan, I think, from Annie's show one day, and it happened to Annie one day. And then once it happened to Annie, things started happening around here. I'm just saying.
Come on now, Mark, you're the big cheese here. You have a lot of weight. The squeaky wheel
was not getting the job done, but Annie knows how to get things done. So we got the new mics, and thank you to Kyle and Misty and our crack engineering team for making that happen.
Yep, CJ, everyone helped us, and we love it.
Yeah. Coming up, Taylor Riggs, host of the Big Money Show. Love getting her on here every Wednesday. And Seth Keschel is going to be up next. He's an author. He's written a new book called The American War on Election Corruption. He's a former captain in the Army, and he's also a veteran of Afghanistan. So we got lots to talk to him about. Very fitting and very timely that is out right now. So we're going to get to him at about 8:20 this morning. Before the hour is out, a huge recognition today for a local smaller company. And we're going to get the owner of said company in here and let him announce that before the end of the show at about 8:45. So stay tuned for that. Right now, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist, presented by Rhino Shield.
Brenda Lee Brown Armstrong admitted she used to pay people on Skid Row $2 or $3 to sign ballot initiative petitions and gave homeless people her address to use so they could register to vote. Armstrong got paid for every signature she got, and the DOJ says this case is just the tip of the iceberg.
Not surprisingly, Kayleigh McEnany yesterday talking about a case of somebody being prosecuted in California for paying people to vote. Hello, that's been going on in East St. Louis for years. I heard that firsthand from somebody over there. So anyway, it's going on around the country. The important thing is it's starting to be prosecuted.
That we are putting out from the state level some guidance
across public spaces, including polling places, of how Virginia state employees or people who are working in support of Virginia's state-run elections.
Yeah, well, that was Governor Abigail Spanberger, and we cut her off before she got to the important point. What she was issuing was a warning because she thinks the feds are going to go to polling places and try to intimidate people. Who are they intimidating? If ICE is at the polling place and you're not here illegally, there's nothing to be intimidated about.
He cannot have $1.7 billion to take care of the Oath Keepers, to take care of Proud Boys, to take care of insurrectionists who attack this Capitol.
Ooh, that's Ed Markey. Those Democrats are big mad over this $1.7 billion settlement that the Trump Corporation and the Trump family made with the IRS after their taxes were illegally exposed. They weren't supposed to be. They sued them for $10 billion. The Trump people aren't making a dime off any of this, and the Democrats are still mad about it.
But you have to understand, when this is finished, my term ends shortly after that. This is really for other presidents. This is not for me. This is my gift to the United States of America.
Yep, that's President Trump yesterday outside of the new MAGA ballroom, which is going to be beautiful. It's going to be huge. It's going to be big. It's going to look like Greek architecture on one side, and it's going to look Roman on the other side. And he was showing all the pictures of it. I mean, the builder in him came out. He was like Bob the Builder. I'm surprised he didn't have a hard hat on yesterday. He was showing all these things that are going to happen. You can hear the construction equipment, the hammering going on behind him back there. And all the while, the Democrats, the left, the media are watching this, and they're seething over it. And I personally don't get it. Listen to the whole bite here. Go to cut 15 in its entirety, please.
But you have to understand, when this is finished, my term ends shortly after that. This is really for other presidents. This is not for me. This is my gift to the United States of America. I'm going to be able to use it very little, because when it's finished, we're talking about 6 or 7 months. But it will be used for hopefully hundreds of years for other presidents. And there will never be anything like this built again. There'll never be a room built like with the safety. As an example, if we had the White House correspondents dinner here, would have been no problem.
That guy is hammering.
So
he turned around and said, "Hey,
could you hold on for just a minute?
I'm trying to do a news conference here."
It's the ambiance. It adds to the interview, I guess, is what he thought. Someone on the text line said, "Tell Kim the cost of the ballroom is not increasing. There's an additional new project being started in conjunction with the ballroom construction that has its own cost. The cost will be paid for by the taxpayers. The ballroom is still privately funded." Yes, appreciate the message. I know. I'm very much aware of that. And the reason why that person texted in is because I have made the comment that the Democrats or anyone who is questioning the cost of this project, of this other portion that's now being added, I've said they're fair questions, that I can support the ballroom. I think that's necessary and should have, quite frankly, been done a very long time ago. What is, again, fair is saying, hey, why is the cost going up? Anything that relates to the taxpayers' money and cost going up, you do need to ask questions, and you always have to do the flip test. We talk about that a lot in the show when the Democrats, how, you know, hypocritical they are when they try to say, you can't do this. And then we do the flip test when it comes to race, for example, and we realize that if you did it, you would see that that's completely a stupid argument. So that's what I'm doing here, that if any sort of a liberal, like if Kamala Harris were doing this, and there was any sort of an increase that would fall back on the taxpayers, I would still, as I should still ask questions, hey, what's going on here? It doesn't negate the fact that that is a necessary thing that should be built there at the White House, but you still need to ask the question.
Okay, I'm fine with that. I mean, at the end of the day, if I don't know that any other president would have done it. They tried to get Obama to do it. Trump offered to do it under Obama, and Obama declined for whatever reason. But it would cost, if it's going to cost $1 billion for the security of what's going underneath the building, then it would have cost $1.4 billion to the taxpayers, because Trump's taken the $400 million up top and covering it himself and with donors. So the taxpayer still comes out on the winning end of all that. You've got a more secure facility for the, you know, the most powerful person in the world. And one of these days, I hate to even say this out loud, that's going to be a Democrat. They'll get one, will get reelected again at some point in the future, maybe after 8 years of J.D. Vance and then 4 or 8 years of Trump Jr. I mean, eventually another Democrat will get in the White House and they'll get to enjoy the big, beautiful MAGA ballroom and everybody will be happy.
Yeah, we needed to be able to host world leaders and other events that we really, it sounds like, haven't had the space to do at the White House. I can't believe it's taken this long. Now, it is interesting to note that Trump, it's not really going to benefit him. What does benefit him is this is a legacy he will leave. He will be known as the president who added the ballroom onto the White House.
I would agree with that completely, and that seems to be what he's after. He's not even going to get to enjoy it. I mean, that's the whole thing.
He gets the legacy. He gets that reputation. Yeah, is the benefit for him.
We're going to get a break here so we can get to Seth Keschel. He's got a new book out on election corruption. Stay tuned.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
If you missed our interview a little earlier, we had Missouri Secretary of State on here, Denny Hoskins, and one of the things he prides himself on is election integrity and trying to deal with a lot of issues to secure the vote in the state of Missouri. I know when Heritage had its list out last year or the year before, we were like in the top five for those election integrity issues. And right now, that's what we're talking about. There's a new book out called The American War on Election Corruption by Seth Keschel, and we want to welcome him to the show this morning. Seth, welcome in.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing fine. We appreciate this. I got a glimpse of your book yesterday and saw that you even got former Speaker Newt Gingrich to write the foreword on this. What is the risk here that we're not seeing? What are you pointing out in this book?
Well, look, the people are right to not trust our elections. We had 40% of Americans at the time of the 2020 election didn't trust the outcome of that one. And by the time 2023 rolled around, after we had the 2022 midterm disaster, 2/3 of Americans did not trust the outcomes of our elections. And that would be the procedures to get them there or the outright results. That number still hovers well over 60%, even though Donald Trump is back in office. So I would like to make the case to the people, the same one that the speaker makes, that our elections are not stolen, but they're rigged. So you mentioned Denny Hoskins when you brought me onto the show. You know, he's the Secretary of State with a lot of important authority over elections. But the laws of the various states dictate what types of ballot counts come out of them. So when you have states that have automatic voter registration, universal or expanded mail-in voting, and then ballot harvesting, you have quasi-elections, not even real elections, that have completely different ballot counts than states that run real election laws.
Yeah, it's a good point. I would assume California is at the top of that list.
California is near the Mount Rushmore of it. And now there are a few states that if they were battleground states would rival California. Washington and Oregon come to mind. But California made my worst list in 2024, despite not being very competitive presidentially, because they ripped off two House seats at Christmas time for Democrats, despite Harris losing 1.8 million votes that Joe Biden had.
Wow. You know, there's been a push here in Missouri and I know elsewhere across the country for us to go back to hand counting ballots. How effective do you think that would be in securing some of these elections?
Well, I mean, I think that that's a piece of the puzzle that would fall into my 10 points to true election integrity. And point number three, voter ID with paper ballots only, hand counting ballots at the precinct. But we also need to make sure that the precincts are manageable sizes. You know, this would work in North Dakota, where they don't have voter registration, but do we have precincts of manageable size? We have a number of precincts here in Arizona with more than 5,000 registered voters. So unless we get that broken down into manageable chunks in which the ballots can be counted by hand on election night without error, then that's only part of the puzzle. The first piece of the puzzle is, in my mind, to completely blank out voter registration databases everywhere, even in safe red states.
Wow. I wondered. I even talked to Denny Hoskins about this effort in by these blue state secretaries of state to push back on being transparent on their voter rolls. And you know, my question goes back. It's always the same. What are you hiding? I mean, there should be full transparency in these voter rolls. Who's on your voter roll, and when is the last time you went in and checked to see if they're legitimately even still living there or dead or whatever the case may be?
Well, you know, it's not just blue state secretaries of state that are not complying with the voter rolls. We have a lot of people that are hiding behind privacy with not complying with the DOJ. The voter rolls are the root of the foundation of election corruption. Let me tell you about automatic voter registration. There were 20 states that operated that in the 2020 election, and Biden won 18 of them. And the electoral vote split was 243-9. And then you move into 2024, Trump won all but five electoral votes, not under automatic voter registration. So we have a number of deep red states, now that the Trump administration is trying to clean this issue up, that won't comply and turn over their voter rolls. Now, I don't know if Missouri has changed on that, but Secretary Hoskins hasn't turned over the voter rolls. The same thing in Idaho. So we have a lot of people who I don't know that anyone in Missouri has something to cover up. But look, there's a good reason nobody wants to go through the voter rolls, because when you have a corrupted voter roll and then you have expanded mail-in voting, then you have the recipe for a quasi-election and a complete disaster. And it's why the results are so predictable in so many states.
Yeah, it looks like you're laying out the path to fix this in this book, correct?
That's 100% the point of the book. I can talk all day about why I think this election is bad or why I think this result is untrustworthy. But if we don't agree on some basic points about why our elections are cooked, then we don't have anywhere to start. I mean, you can even look all over the rest of the world. That's one of my favorite points, is you have 34 out of 47 European countries that ban mail-in voting.
Yeah.
Europe sits far to the left of any American state. And this is why when people, you know, when the president jokes about bringing Canada into the union, look, Canada wouldn't have a single province that would vote for an American Republican. It's not
right.
going to happen.
Correct.
So look, if Europe has 34 of 47 countries that ban mail-in voting, and the 13 that allow only have exceptions for overseas citizens voting, and then Mexico, Japan, Russia, Israel, all these countries ban mail-in voting because it's the single biggest vector of cheating available in elections, then it should make people ask questions. Why are American blue and purple states trying to expand the mail-in vote?
It's a good question. The book is American War on Election Corruption by Seth Keschel. You can buy it on Amazon, wherever you get your favorite book. Seth, thank you. Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you guys.
All
have
right.
A great day.
You too. Good to get him on here. We're back with Taylor Riggs in just a minute.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
I cannot help but think of the words of our 40th president, Ronald Reagan. He famously said, "The nine most terrifying words in the English language are, 'I'm from the government and I'm here to help.'" It's a good quote, but I disagree. I think nine more terrifying words are actually, "I worked all day and can't feed my family." We are going to use the power of government to lower prices and make it easier for New Yorkers to put food on the table. When government understands its purpose as serving the very working people that it has left behind time and again, it can make a difference in the most pressing struggles facing our city today. It's not just that government can help. It's that government must help. And our government will help.
Look at 100 deals a day. I choose one.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
The most valuable commodity I know of is information.
Who is that girl?
I'm Taylor Riggs.
Great to have Taylor back on the air this morning. That was Mayor Mom Donnie there, and that big giant sucking sound was all the people leaving, rushing to leave New York before he can tax them to death.
Oh, gosh, doesn't it just, like, hurt your stomach when he talks about how big government's going to solve all of our problems?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm like, have you been to the DMV lately or the post office? I mean, God bless those people. They're so kind, but everything is so slow. I went to get a passport at the post office for my girl.
Yeah.
And, well, she had to take a lunch break, so she couldn't do the passport. And, you know, again, it's not the workers' fault. It's the union fault. It's this government that keeps, you know, again, big government that is just so inefficient. And so I just, like, hurt. I, like, wrinkle over in pain when I start hearing about how big government socialism is going to somehow solve all of our problems. It hurts. It hurts.
I love that. You know, Taylor, I was just thinking about that because they just solved that Long Island rail issue up there. And I heard the governor, Hochul, trying to blame Donald Trump for the problem. Because in the past, how they dealt with that is if they couldn't agree on the contract, the union just asked for much more than it wanted, and then it automatically went to arbitration. And now that doesn't happen anymore, correct? They actually have to work it out.
Yeah, imagine having to figure it out. So look, I'm in New York City. That is the nation's largest rail. I have a wonderful helper in my family who helps me watch my children when I'm not at work. And
oh,
he
nice.
Relies on that.
Yes.
And they are screwing the middle and the lower class. She had to drive in. We have a congestion toll. We have parking fees. We have all of these other tolls because they decided that they wanted a little extra money. First of all, they're already getting a 5% wage increase. They wanted more than that. And the average worker is making $136,000 on that train, and it still isn't enough. They wanted more. And then, yes, don't even get me started about Kathy Hochul then trying to blame Trump for all of her problems. So, you know me, I'm more of a free market enterprise girl. Generally, I'm not like the biggest union person. I'd like us to be able to have the free market sort of set these rates. But when you hold, and I think that too, and we saw this in the election, there's a big difference between the union leaders and the union workers. The union leaders, they're all getting $100,000 in overtime alone.
Oh.
They all love this stuff. But it's actually the union workers that are much more aligned with the Trump populism movement because they feel left behind. But the union leaders are all the people like the Elizabeth Warren and the Randy Weingarten who just want to hold their workers hostage and hold, again, these poor railroad riders hostage. But thankfully, it's solved. And again, just more money draining out of the city.
So Kevin Warsh has officially taken over for Jerome Powell as Fed chair. And I forget who it was, but someone was making the comment that the first number of months, it's going to be really critical that he get back to that 2% target of for the inflation. Do you think that that's possible or where would you say that it, how long would it take you think to get back to that point?
You want my cold take? Are you sitting down?
We are.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think it's happening this year. I mean, I'm looking at Brent futures in December. They're still looking at $80 a barrel. The market's pricing in a hike. Now, that's not going to happen. But I don't think you can cut when Brent's going to be 80 bucks through the end of the year. So I want to come on this program and be positive, but I'm just going to be real and just give it to you straight. I don't see it. This Iran thing has gone on, I think, a little bit longer than we all thought. And we keep doing ceasefire deals instead of kind of just ending it and getting the strait open.
Yep.
And I told you guys a couple of weeks ago, oil will not come down until the strait is open.
Correct.
And the strait is not open, it's closed.
Yeah, Trump's talking about that live right now. He's talking about this ongoing standoff with Iran because he said he was, an hour away from striking before he had, you know, someone reach out to him and say, hey, could you just hold off a little bit? To which obviously he agreed. But yeah, you're right. I think the straits really what's going to hold up. And I heard someone even saying, and Taylor, I'd be curious to get your take on this, that even once the strait is open, it could take several months for the prices of oil to actually drop to close to where they were before this all started.
Yeah, because just think of the backlog.
Yeah.
So we can't produce more because storage facilities are full, right? In Iran, that's the case. Then you've got to load the boat. You've got to ship it out. You have all these guys just idling, standing by. Now, we'll produce more because oil's higher, at least here in the U.S. There is some big tailwind to us. China said that they'll start buying oil from us instead of Iran. Okay, let's see. China says a lot of things and they never follow through. Venezuela may be coming online. So there is definitely enough supply. It's just the transport of that supply. And instead of using, you guys, we've talked about the heavy crude that comes, the heavy sour.
Right.
We produce the light sweet. So then you've got to like switch which kind of oil you're refining, which is why we can't just like produce in Texas and consume. We still kind of like import and export a little bit. So it's just like this very entangled global market. There is good news. I think we have more allies in the UAE than we thought. If China buys our oil, sounds great. We're going to starve Iran's leaders to death. Sounds great economically. But it's a lot longer than we thought. And I just don't have good news on that for oil coming down.
And the big guy, as much as we'd like to say, hey, we're energy independent, why don't we just buck the system and get off the global market, the big oil companies don't want to do that, correct? They profit off
probably
of it.
Not exactly.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and it's unfortunately it's like just an import and an export business.
Yes.
California, you and I have talked about, because they have such a horrendous business climate where they don't want any oil and gas, they don't want to drill, and so they're importing oil from the Bahamas and from Iraq and Saudi Arabia. Mm. California will not use any oil as much from the U.S. They're big importers because that's what they refine. California has chosen to refine the oil that they get from Iraq. And then on top of that, you have 30 or 40 refineries in the 80s. I think you now have 12 because most of the refiners say it's not worth it to do business in California.
Right.
So California could face a severe energy shortage, but that's of their own making. That's their problem because they refuse to do business. But I mean, the other hand of that, do you want some optimism news? AAA thinks this is going to be a record holiday season. We're kicking off summer driving season, so oil always actually goes up during the summer. People are still traveling. I mean, cruises say that people are traveling. It's hard to give up your summer vacation. So yeah. The consumer for now is okay, you know, eating some of this cost.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how long that lasts, I guess. Taylor, thank you. Have yourself a great week.
You too.
All right. We'll talk soon. Taylor Riggs there with not great news, but I mean, I don't think
real
it's
news.
A surprise to anybody.
Yeah. I'd rather her just be honest, and I'm not super surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Coming up, I announced this earlier, local companies getting quite the big honor today from a really national, I guess you could argue an international perspective. We're going to get them in studio to talk about it coming up. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back. You know, I've got some guests in the studio here. We're, of course, celebrating a lot of stuff this year, including the 250th anniversary of the United States of America. In studio, I've got Dave Weglers from Still 630. I've got Doug Schaeffler, a retired law enforcement officer and bourbon extraordinaire, taster extraordinaire, and can tell you that. Used to be on my podcast a lot. Of course, I've had both of you guys on the bourbon podcast over the years talking about this. But you got quite a big announcement today from one of your latest creations, right, Dave?
Yes, sir. Thanks again for having
Absolutely.
Us. Absolutely. But yeah, that's May 20th is a big day that we've had circled on our calendar for a while, because the American Distilling Institute is about to release their, well, at least this was embargoed until today. They're releasing the results from their annual spirits competition. So distilleries from all over the country and all over the world actually submit spirits. They'll have, you know, 1,500 different spirits submitted, and the judges over a number of days go through and they taste them all and they score them and they rank them and they compare them side by side, and then they give out medals and greater awards.
Yeah.
And we've won some big things.
I'd say you have, and I mean, Doug's question would be, how do I get one of those jobs? Where
yeah,
you just get to sample
job.
All those different bourbons and
fantastic.
Try it?
That'd be fantastic.
It takes a certain palate, you know.
I guess it does, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So in this particular case, tell us about the bourbon you brought in today, please.
So this was a special barrel pick, a single barrel that was chosen by Doug here.
Well, I had help.
You did help. Yeah.
I had four of my friends, including Mark Cox here.
I could name my
other friends. Mark Sowers, a great friend of mine. Mark Alders, my best friend. John McIntosh, who's a commander at the Creve Coeur Police Department right now. And my financial manager, Drew Ishmael, with Gen X Financial Services.
Right. And we got to go down to Still 630, and we had a bunch of different barrels to pick from. Mm-hmm. We all agreed on this. It was unanimous.
It was quickly unanimous.
It was outstanding. So then you get this sent off for this competition.
Yes.
So technically, this is some of the best bourbon in the world, because this was an international competition.
Well, bourbon can only be made in the United States.
I know that.
And, I know you know that.
Doug.
Calling Mark out.
I'm simply pointing out that because it can only be made in the United States, and this is the best craft bourbon in America now, it's technically the best craft bourbon on the planet.
Think about that. That's
and
what I mean.
It did win another award.
Well,
it was named America's Best Cask Strength Whiskey. It beat out every other whiskey made in America.
That's amazing.
Can I ask a random question? Why can it only be made in America?
It's a federal law that was passed in 1964, where the federal government said Americans going to be bourbon's going to be a very uniquely American product. Where Scotch is from Scotland, tequila is from Mexico, bourbon is United States.
Did not know that.
Well, you were kind enough to bring in a little sample of this, even though I've sampled it before. Ethan, you're going to have to try a sample of this and tell us what you think.
It's delicious. I already
is it?
Tried
You've
it.
Already tried it.
Clearly, you guys could all have those jabs of judging because you chose this, it was named the best craft, best cast strength whiskey.
Oh, it's so
well, there's
good.
Very few jobs where you could do this at 8:55 in the morning, and it's
5 o'clock somewhere is what we always like to say. So, Dave, again, tell us about Still 630 real quick. While I got about a minute and a half here.
Yeah,
you guys are celebrating the 250th with a different bottle every month, right?
Yes. So we put down a special bourbon mash bill recipe back during the pandemic, literally in 2020. We put down these 12 different single barrels, each one commemorating a unique moment in American history, and we're releasing them one per month. You come out any Friday of the month, and we'll give you a free pour of that month's new release. We're open 5 to 9 on Fridays for cocktails, pours, and flights. Open to the public. Come on down. And we'll give you the latest release in our 250 bourbon series. And they come with awesome little challenge coins that are super cool. And it's a fantastic release schedule all year long.
Still 630 is right there, Broadway and Shoto.
Yes, sir.
I got the address correct. Is the bottle that won international competition available for purchase?
Batch 1 is not.
Batch 1 is not.
But there are some bottles available,
batch
right?
Batch 2 will be available starting June 12th,
okay,
which is the anniversary of my graduation from the Police Academy.
There you go.
So Due Process Whiskey Batch 2 is available June 12th.
All right. Dave, Doug, thank you. Still 630. Go check him out. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, guys. Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right. On audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.